Right, thank you very much for everybody to coming. I'm amazed to see so many people that have come travelled so far to be in the audience. My name's Andy Clark, and I'm a designer from the UK. And this is my good friend and colleague, Andy Budd, who's also a designer. Does that describe you correctly? That
pretty much, yeah.
And
I like to think of myself as a user experience designer.
User experience designer. Thank you for clarifying that. And we're going to talk to you about how to be a web design superhero. Now, the one thing I should kind of point out at the beginning is that we are Brits. And I know there are more Brits in the audience than perhaps there have been in previous years, but if understanding us is any Barney, then can you kind of shout out? And that would be nice. So, how to be a web design superhero. Rock and roll. When I was growing up as a little kid, the careers officer at school would always say, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up, Clarky? And it would be, you know, I want to be a kind of a fireman or an astronaut was a favourite one for a while. The one thing that I never thought was that I wanted to be a web designer. I often kind of wanted to be a superhero, really, sort of sticking in my bedroom, reading comics. And I suppose that if you asked a lot of people the question, what would you prefer to be? Would you prefer to be a web designer or a superhero? In fact, let's ask the question. How many people here would rather be a superhero or a web designer? Superheroes. Okay, well, we did a survey. Very, very scientific survey. Which, and out of the 10 people that we asked, 85% of people decided that they would rather be a superhero than a web designer. So, obviously, 85% wanting to be a superhero, 14%, strangely, wanted to be web designers, and 1% was Jeffrey Veen. He wasn't too sure what he was. So, we want to talk to you about what it is or how to be a web design superhero today. So, I'm going to start off by handing over to Andy, who's going to take you through the first part.
Brilliant. Thanks very much. To survive in the modern world, web designers need to be superheroes. With all of the stress and the pressure of our job, we're called upon to put in so much effort into our daily lives. So we're going to talk a little bit about how we can become superheroes. And we're going to learn how we can all be superheroes like people like Super Zeld, Jeffrey Zeldman. Wonderful illustration, by the way, by Sergio. I don't know if Sergio is in the room, but thank you very much for that. No. Oh. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to talk a little bit about what it takes to be a superhero and the parallels that that has with how we can be better web designers. First off, every superhero has an origin story. This is the story that explains how they came about, how they got into being a superhero, explains their motivations. For instance, Peter Parker, he was bitten by a radioactive spider. Bruce Banner was blasted by gamma radiation, and the Fantastic Four were bathed in cosmic rays. Most of us didn't start lives as web designers. We kind of got into it through a bizarre, often unrelated sort of set of events. And the way that we as individuals got into the web design industry often hints at our skills and our interests. I mean, you take someone like Douglas Bowman. He started life as a graphic designer working for Wired News. He was influenced by people like Jeffrey Veen, who he worked with on a daily basis. He got bitten by the CSS bug, and now I think he's possibly one of the best web spinners around today. So have a think about your origin story and how you got into web design. One of the key features of superheroes is they have a strong moral code. They're willing to risk their lives for the well-being of their fellow man and the greater good. I believe web designers also have a strong moral code, and this is probably why we're all here today. We have a belief in what's right and wrong on the web, and a desire to put right the injustices of bad web design. And I think it's really key for us to sort of focus on our drive and why we're doing this. Most of the superheroes out there are selfless. They fight crime and keep everyone safe from danger, basically making the world a safer place. Web designers and web design superheroes are also selfless. sharing knowledge and experience freely. There's probably a lot of bloggers in the audience, people that write articles, write posts on their web blogs, doing this all hours of the day, very little recognition, no money, getting paid for doing this, literally just to make the web a better place. And it's a thankless task, but someone out there has got to do it. Most superheroes have special motivations, putting themselves in mortal danger to fight crime. For instance, Batman was motivated by a desire to fight criminals. Captain America was driven by his strong sense of justice. I think web designers are also... I think web designers are also driven by special motivations, like improving usability, promoting web standards. For instance, Douglas Bowman has a passion of good design. Jeffrey Veen is passionate about information architecture and user-centered design and usability. Jeremy Keith is driven by spreading the word of the DOM. Being a web designer really is a calling, and being a web design superhero is a calling. I mean, I personally don't understand web designers that aren't passionate about their jobs. I mean, there are a few people out there who just go in, they do their job, they come home, that's it, it's just a job to them. To be a web design superhero, you need to be driven, you need to be motivated, you need to be passionate about what you do. And I'm guessing this is why all you guys are here, because you've come, you love what you do, and you're passionate about it, and you want to spread the word, and you want to soak up as much information as possible. So passion is a strong motivation for us. Most superheroes have a secret identity. Superman was Clark Kent. Spider-Man was Peter Parker. Similarly, many web designers have an online alter ego. You may know people's names. Like Brother Kate. Thanks. You may know people's names like Brother Cake, Centricle, or the Man in Blue. They have very superhero names anyway. That's their secret online identity. There are also some fantastic designers in the audience, people like Mark Bolton, Drew McClellan, Ville Peters. You might have heard of these people, you might have seen their work, but have you actually spoken to them? Do you know what they look like? They might be sitting in the audience next to you. One of the things, the great things about South by Southwest is it gives you the ability to meet your heroes, your web superheroes. So please take the opportunity when you're at evening events, when you're in the hallways, to go up and talk to as many people as possible. Also, it's inevitable, but you don't generally name check people. You look at their badge, see who they are. There's a lot of people out there that are doing fantastic work that might not have the kind of superhero name that you associate, but they're probably superheroes anyway. So make sure you don't dismiss people when you see people. If you don't know their name, talk to them, because they're still probably doing fantastic work, or they wouldn't be here otherwise. Superheroes, they need a secret hideaway, a retreat to store their super gadgets and gizmos. Superman has his Fortress of Solitude. Batman has his Batcave. A lair is also essential for web designers. It's somewhere you go for inspiration. It's where you store your super gadgets like your iPod and your PowerBook. And it's somewhere you can sit next to your bat phone waiting for your next call to action to right the wrongs of bad web design. And the picture you see on screen is actually John Hicks's infamous Lair of the Burning Fox. if John's in the audience. Superheroes are easy to identify by their logos and costumes. For instance, we've got Superman's giant S. We've got Captain America's star, and we've got the Fantastic Four. It's a Fantastic Four. web designers also require a great logo. It sets them apart from the crowd. It makes them easy identifiable. A logo, a gravatar, a favicon, whatever. And I just wanted to ask, how many people in the audience recognize these logos just by looking at the logos? Do you know who the web designer is behind these logos? How many people can recognize sort of 4 out of the 6? Show of hands. 5. Anybody recognize all 6? A couple of you. Okay. Having a logo is really important. It's your brand. It's the way that people identify you, in a similar way to the superhero's logo. And like the costumes, we all need a super website. We need a home, we need a place that is identifiable. And here's a selection of some of my favorite websites out there. Superheroes are often lone crusaders, working in a mundane day job, exercising their powers solely at night. This is also true of most web design superheroes. Most web designers out there are working in a dull, uninspired office during day, and they come home at night and they work on their secret projects, their special projects. Often going back into the office during the day, looking disheveled because they pulled an all-nighter, cuts and bruises from kicking up in the web design scene, but they're happy,
kicking
they're sated.
I kicking it that. Up?
Kicking it up.
We're Brits, man.
It's web kung fu.
Oh,
okay.
I
think there are a lot of parallels between us and superheroes as well. Leading a secret double life. However, sometimes superheroes, generally they're lone crusaders, but sometimes they group together to form powerful units. You've got the X-Men, you've got the Justice League of America, you've got the Fantastic Four. Each member of the team has an overlapping skill that individually is quite powerful, but brought together as a whole, gives these teams fantastic powers and fantastic abilities. In the same way, web designers as individuals are very, very powerful as individuals, but grouped together in units, they can do fantastic stuff. You only have to look at some of the supergroups out there like Adaptive Path, HabiCog, and Blue Favor to see the power of individuals coming together to do fantastic work. And obviously, each member of these teams has specific skills, design skills, information architecture, client handling, and they all come together to form a powerful unit. A lot of superheroes don't actually have superpowers, relying instead on gadgets and special weapons. The best designers are also sort of skilled with their tools, and they have a utility belt full of useful stuff, fonts, icons, stock photos, textures, design inspiration. It's really important to have all of these things, all of these elements at hand so you can pull on them and call on them at any stage. Also, many superheroes have a trademark weapon. Batman had his Batarang. Wonder Woman had a magic truth lasso, which I'm sure a lot of the gentlemen in the audience remember quite fondly. Web design superheroes also need a weapon of choice, you know, be that Photoshop, Illustrator, Flash, or even the humble text editor. You need to have a weapon of choice that you're an expert in. That's a real, real key thing. However, the main defining feature of a superhero is their superpower. And we're going to talk a little bit now, I'm going to hand you over to Andy, and we're going to discuss what superpowers you guys need to become web design superheroes.
Thank you very much.
Over to Andy.
Superpowers. I love this mic. Do Darth Vader impressions at the same time. So, is everything clear so far as to where we are in being web design superheroes? This is my favorite bit because I always used to dream of having superpowers. When I was growing up in Morecambe, which is a little seaside town on the northwest coast, there was this jetty and it had this curve and it was great because it was just the right angle where I could crawl and be like Spider-Man. And then I went off to work. So, superpowers. Now, when it comes to superpowers, one of the most famous things, I think, is super speed. There's a nice picture of Superman up there. Is anybody familiar with a character called the Flash? Yeah, his superpower was that he could run quickly. Away from danger, perhaps, but he could run so fast he could turn back time, which was, maybe he should just run slower. I don't know. Super speed, though. We really do now need super speed to keep up with the pace of change in the industry. I remember when I started that, you know, the most difficult thing that you had to worry about was when they upgraded Dreamweaver, and there was a whole bunch of new sort of functionality or extensions or whatever that we had to kind of learn. Now, of course, things are changing far, far more rapidly than that, and you know, just with some of the new terms and the new technologies and the fact that you know new ideas and new techniques are being developed and talked about all the time. So if we're keeping up with websites, we're keeping up with blogs, we're reading constantly what's going on, and we really do need to be adaptive and changing much, much quicker than we ever had to do before. And of course, when it comes to super speed, we have to be able to react when a client says, well, I want that tomorrow, which is, you know, which is often what they do. So super speed is incredibly important, as is elasticity. And when it comes to projects, we need to have an ability to stretch ourselves very, very thin, particularly when it comes to kind of looming deadlines. And then, of course, there's telepathy and clairvoyance, which is a power which I wish I had more, particularly trying to understand women. It would be very nice. But, you know, particularly an ability to be able to see into a client's mind and understand what they mean. I mean, I'm sure that everybody that is involved in design gets a brief from the client, and you look at it and you go, what? And they go, well, I want it easy to use. You know, and they provide you with, you know, with very little in the way of briefs or materials. So it's very important that we can, you know, as superheroes, try to get inside a client's mind and understand exactly what it is that they're trying to ask us to do, even though perhaps they don't often know what it is themselves that they're looking for. If, of course, that doesn't work, it'd be really nice to have some mind control. So we can concentrate and... You do not need that flash splash screen. Nobody will read that content. Don't bother putting it in. So, unfortunately, it's not something which we can rely on in day-to-day life. But we do have to be convincing. And we have to be passionate about what it is that we're promoting to a client, exactly what we're saying. And often it's no good saying, well, I think we should do this. You know, we have to have convincing arguments to be able to change their mind. Because often, you know, they don't know what they want. And quite often, what they want, we know isn't right. And as professionals, we ought to be having the gumption to be able to stand up and say, no, that's wrong. You're completely off the mark. And to try and change their mind. But the most important thing, I think, when it comes to areas of the mind... is an ability that we need to understand that, you know, that we're designing websites. We're not designing them for ourselves, and we're not designing them for the client that's paying us the money either. We're designing them for the users. We're designing them for visitors to that site. And it is really important that we can empathize with the users of that site. Otherwise, we're just going to not provide or not create a very usable or perhaps accessible site in terms of content. So we need to be able to understand what the goals of the users are and to work with the goals of those users when we're designing a site. So empathy is very, very important. Now, when it comes to clients, there are a few things that I think, I mean, I certainly haven't learned this, so I'm in no way a superhero when it comes to this. But, you know, we do need an ability to be able to sense when a project is wrong or often when a client is wrong, because even though they've got a checkbook in their hand, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're an ideal client for us to work with. You know, I've had the unfortunate experience of, you know, having projects go sour and, in fact, sacking clients on occasion, which is not a good thing that we have to do. So having an ability to be able to sense when something isn't right and just head it off at the beginning is very, very important for us to be able to do. And to be able to see projects, to see problems before they arise and have some kind of plan for rectifying them. So project management is something that I'm learning a great deal about and, you know, trying to do better with, so that we can see what the problems are before they arise and perhaps pull in additional resources or freelancers or some form of strategy that helps us get the jobs out better and keep happy clients, which I think is what we're all trying to do. And then, of course, you know, we need to have a certain amount of precognition, so that we can see what's coming up, so that when it comes to presenting ideas to the client, we're always going to be at the cutting edge. We're always going to be able to be talking to the client about perhaps what the best technologies to use are, or some of the latest ideas in terms of user-centered design. Keeping an eye on what's coming up and being able to always be pushing that with any new project. Now, when it comes to actually making sites, I've started to believe that X-ray vision is particularly important, because I believe that we often approach the process of doing web design the wrong way around. And quite often we'll look at a layout and we'll be writing markup for the purposes of getting that layout as we want it. So for example, headers or footers or sidebars or whatever. We're always looking as designers to accomplish the visual result. And quite often that can lead to markup which is, you know, semantically less appropriate perhaps than it ought to be. So really our goal as professionals now should be to be able to see through the presentation and purely look at the semantic meaning. And now with CSS, you know, we're able to take documents which are, you know, much, much purer, much less full of any kind of presentational attributes, and produce documents which are a lot more flexible and a lot more accessible across different platforms. And X-ray vision is really, really important to be able to see through that visual presentation and then to understand the semantics and what it is that's going to provide us with the firm foundation for markup. But at the end of the day, no matter how hard we try, things are always going to go wrong to a certain degree. And as creatives, we need to develop a bit of a thick skin. Maybe not quite as thick as Mr. Oxton there. but we do need to develop a thick skin. We can do our best with everything. We can try our absolute hardest. We can put all the hours God sends into a project and still things may go wrong. And sometimes it's the fact that a client might say, well, actually, I don't like that, which is sometimes a difficult thing for a creative to understand. And also when we are very, very proud of something and it gets picked up by Style Gala or CSS Vault or one of these galleries. And then the comments start to fly and the trolls start to be involved. And people start picking on the absolute minutiae of our markup or design. We do need to develop a bit of a thick skin and a certain amount of invulnerability. Not to take it to heart. I mean, it's often said that actors never read their own reviews. And I think that that's something which maybe now we're getting over the idea that, you know, oh, it's great to have our work on Style Gala or really good to have it on CSS Vault. We should just do the best we can and let it go. And you know, stop really paying attention to, you know, to some of the negative criticisms that often fly, not often for no apparent reason.
Jason Santamaria's got a fantastic article on his website about how to handle critiquing, both from terms of being a critique done on you, and also you doing a critique on other designers. So it's worth checking out.
And of course, invisibility. Now, last year, there was a panel at South by Southwest, which was Where Are the Women in Web Design? And I'm really pleased at actually how many more women there are today. And
that's fantastic.
You know, women are becoming much more visible. And I think that, you know, there are a tremendous amount of women that are out there doing some fantastic work. Vila, is Vila in the audience today? Thank you very much. Yeah. I think, actually, I would just like to publicly applaud your redesign, Vila, and the fact that you can get 200 comments in a day.
Wow.
Which is some kind of record. Only Dan Cederholm usually does that. It is very, 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 very good to see some fantastic stuff coming out. And, you know, I would like to think that women start to maybe blog about stuff or promote things or promote ideas a little bit more. But it is changing, and there's some marvelous stuff coming out. Now, alongside a superhero, of course, lots of superheroes have some form of sidekick. And Batman's got Robin. I don't think we'll go there. Superman had Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane, the love of his life. And Crypto the Superdog. Does anybody... whose purpose still escapes me. But apparently he was a dog, and
he was super.
And he was super. Very good. He had a cape, which is even nicer. And of course, web designers also perhaps have super pals. So Superman's pal, obviously Jimmy Olsen, and Robin, the Boy Wonder. Zeldman has his Boy Wonder. Are you in here, Jason? And of course, superheroes often have supervillains. Lex Luthor, who is an evil genius wanting to take over the world at any given opportunity. Spider-Man with the Green Goblin. Again, the least said about that, the better. And of course, the same is true on the web. Neither of these gentlemen are here, are they? So, the question remains to be asked, you know, who are your heroes? Well, we've put together a little bit of a list of people that we find inspirational, people that we look up to, people that we know are producing wonderful stuff for the web.
Many of whom are here today.
And many of whom are here today. So I'm not going to read this list out. I think we should just pull up our list of inspiration on screen and say thank you very, very much to all of these people for doing everything that they've done. And the question that remains to be asked is, what superpowers would you choose and why? So thank you very, very much for coming. We can open this up to discussions, we can open it up for questions, we can open it up for anything other than dancing, I think, would be the thing to do. So I'd just like to say, on behalf of my friend here, thank you very much for coming.
So, does anybody out there have a superpower they wish they had that we've missed off the list? If anyone's got any suggestions, there's a couple of free books in it for you. Lady over there, have we got a roaming mic, or do you just have to... Okay.
I just have a question. Your names are Andy and Clark, which are the...
Oh, Andy Budd and Andy Clark.
...of Erasure, and I was just wondering if there was any connection there.
Between the two of us?
No, between Erasure.
Maybe you're the members of Erasure by day.
Oh! Oh my...
I'll open this up to Andy.
Well, there is a bit of a Vince Clark thing going on with you, mate.
That's it.
It's the way you suck your cheekbones in. But to answer your question, no. Perhaps Page and Plant might be a better analogy.
Am I the plant?
Oh, Abbott and Costello.
That's probably more likely. So, I mean, does anyone else have... Oh, Jason.
No, we're both Richard Rutter's psychic.
Yes, absolutely. Any other gentleman over there?
Superheroes have a vulnerability.
Ah,
ooh.
Okay.
Oh, now that's a good one.
What's your vulnerability?
My vulnerability? It's not sideburns. My vulnerability, apart from addiction to nicotine, is... Oh, now that is a good question. Do you want a serious answer or a sensible answer? No. My vulnerability is that I don't know what I'm talking about. Do you want a silly answer or a serious answer? A serious answer. Actually, this is serious. I'm very good at, or very bad at being... I always try to see the best in people, and quite often in business, it's not the thing. It's not the thing to do. And I'm always quite trusting, and I take people at face value, whether it's clients or business partners or whatever it happens to be. And I know that I need to be. And there was a serious point here, actually. I know that I need to be more wary of perhaps of people with ulterior motives. Even if those motives are just, you know, they want to get a quick deal or a cheap job or something like that. So I think that it is actually very important as we start to get more professional, because a lot of designers tend to do things. I mean, I know when I started, it was like a hobby that I made money from. And I was very, you know, enthusiastic about doing the job. And one of the things that I've learned over recent years is that you have to get things written down. And you have to get things contracted or purchase ordered or whatever. And I'm still pretty bad at that. And I've, you know, it is a vulnerability where I tend to be too trusting on occasion. So there's your serious answer.
I think my vulnerability really is confidence in my design ability. I mean, I like probably a lot of you guys in the audience, I'm not a trained graphic designer. I'm self-taught. I taught myself design from looking at wonderful blogs of a lot of people in the audience. And I do feel at times I don't have the vocabulary, I don't have the training in design, which is why it was really good to see a snippet of Mark Bolton and Jason and the other guys talk, because I think we really need to start... as you mentioned, a lot of us started design as a bit of a hobby and it's grown into a profession, but because it's so young, there isn't the level of training and the level of teaching out there that we really need. And I think that's my personal vulnerability is not having, feeling that I have the vocabulary and the training in design that I would like.
I think that that's if I can continue with that, it's a very interesting point in that I know that in education that there's a lot of emphasis on applications. Mm. So particularly within web education, there's emphasis on things like Flash or multimedia stuff.
Yeah.
Is there any education at all about standards? Is there any education at all about user-centered design? How to design for a user?
Yeah.
And the answer is probably no at this point, because we're really just making it up as we go along. And I think that that's something which is... Mm. It's easy to think, well, I don't have this training or I don't have this, but you know, the web's such a young medium that
We are making a lot of the patterns up as we go along, so it is difficult. But
anybody else?
Lady at the front.
Yeah, just talking about what you need to have for web design superhero stuff, I think perseverance, because I know my own experiences is that I've had massive arguments in the past year or two with dealing with programmers or project managers just trying to get them to accept standards and semantics and CSS.
Just for the other people in the audience, in case they didn't hear the lady, she suggests that superheroes also need perseverance, particularly when working, you know, to convince other people, perhaps within teams or managers or whatever, to adopt standards. Does that sum it up, Murray?
I mean, I think we're really lucky. I mean, I honestly think 2006 is the year that CSS and standards-based design really takes off. You know, I think it's now becoming... Molly would probably disagree with me here, but I think it's now becoming much more of a norm. I think, you know, come to South by Southwest 2 years ago and everyone was just getting into it and just interested, not really doing it. Now, you know, more and more people I see are churning out fantastic web design work that are done in standards. You know, I'm seeing some fantastic new designers, you know, that are sort of 19, 20, that have only ever known a world of web standards. So I think really we are, you know, there still is a journey to have, but I think we've broken over the barrier, and hopefully it's all going to be sort of downhill from here.
Just to move on from that, if I may, and take a spin on the word superpower. I mean, we always used to think about superpowers being you know, the Soviet bloc and the Americans politically. Okay. And I'm not going to get into a political rant, so that's okay. But on the web, you know, we do have superpowers in those respects.
Okay.
In different industries. And I wrote about this on the blog fairly recently, where we take something like Amazon. Is there any representatives or employees from Amazon here? No? Good.
Remember, we're being podcast as well.
We are being podcast. I'm not going to say anything rude, but what we have on the web is we have key sites, key businesses that are the superpowers in those particular industries. So Amazon, for example, as an online retailer. I mean, some more examples would be welcome, but
Yahoo, Google,
eBay. eBay is a good one. Now, I know for a fact that there are very, very good individuals working often inside those organizations. So Norm from Yahoo. Is anybody else from Yahoo here today? Yeah. There are a lot of good people promoting standards internally at an awful lot of organisations, and I get to meet more and more of them as I do.
Well, I think the BBC is a
around.
Classic case. I mean, there's some fantastic developers who I consider superheroes working in the BBC.
Absolutely.
Who are really trying to push standards and push good design, but they're faced against a bit of a brick wall of, you know, like the lady was saying.
Now, the key thing here is that we've seen it with certain sites. I mean. Perhaps a client chooses as a design house to do a site. Mentioning no names here with the... yes. They'll choose a design house to do a job, and they'll get a standards-based site. Mm. Or perhaps they'll have an employee or a group of employees within the organisation that are passionate about standards. And all of a sudden, the promotion of standards or the adoption of standards within the organisation will become... will be pushed further forward. However, it's reliant on those individuals. And what happens if those individuals leave? What happens if a business executive decides that they're going to change agencies because they're going to change campaigns? All of a sudden, all of that hard work can be undone in seconds.
I mean, quite often, developing with web standards is actually a bit of a virus. Because what tends to happen is you'll have a carrier in an institution who is one individual who is fantastically interested in standards. And then over the course of a few years, they infect other individuals who then get that passion. When that original individual leaves, they've left their mark on the institution. So
That can happen. What I would like to see, there is always the danger, of course, that when those individuals leave, that other people within the organisation perhaps don't understand what's been accomplished. And I'd very much like to see these superpowers targeted at a top level, at a managerial level, stung, if you like, so that it's a top-down approach rather than a bottom-up approach in terms of adopting standards. And I think there's a lot we can do with that.
Does anyone have any other
Kevin.
Super...
Kevin.
I'll use the mic because this might be a long question. Yeah. Everything they're talking about, we're going to talk about Tuesday morning at the How to Convince Your Company to Embrace Standards panel.
Fantastic.
So, sorry, panel plug. But my real question is, I think you didn't really mention it, but you kind of touched on it with the super groups. Is that a superpower that I feel is missing in a lot of design is collaboration. And that we have a lot of designers, especially where I work, that come from print or come from, you know, DVD menu, you know, that kind of interactive stuff that don't really have a... They don't have a standards background. They probably never built a page in their life, except maybe with Dreamweaver, and they never once looked at the source code. And you guys, I know Andy especially. Clark and I spent some wonderful time together.
You say the nicest thing.
So I know a little bit about his philosophy on this, but. How do you approach, as standards-based designers, collaborating with developers, especially because we feel like sidekicks to your designs because we have to pull that off. But how does that relationship work when it works well, and then how have you seen it not work well?
I don't want to plug the company I work for, but the way that we work is we're primarily front-end designers and developers. So we do the designs, we build the templates, and we service the back-end developers. So we create the templates, we pass them off to them, and then they integrate them into their system, usually. So, and it works really, really well. I mean, I've found using web... I mean, a lot of people talk about web standards, and they talk about being able to update a page anywhere, make one change and the design cascades down. They talk about, the bandwidth, all this kind of stuff. I think the real benefit in web standards for me is in integrating the front end with the back end. You'll have your back end developers building the site in a very bare bones fashion. You'll then pass over the templates, and all they need to do is literally hook in the CSS file and you're there. So, The back-end developers now don't need to worry about the visual presentation. They don't need to worry about slicing up headers and footers and all this kind of stuff. they can just worry about the interactivity and the code and the programming, and the designers and front-end developers can then come in and lay that over the top. So I found it works really well. I mean, I think it's one of the key benefits of developing web standards. And I've not had any sort of real problems with that. I mean, sometimes it's a slightly different methodology. Most web developers, back-end developers, expect to be given a series of designs and templates, which then they create. And that they expect this process to be template build and then build the back end. What I tend to find is that actually happens in parallel. So we'll be building the designs and the templates while they'll be building the back end. And then at the end of that process, it gets integrated. And that process is a little bit different from what they normally expect. So there is, at the start, a little bit of kind of hesitation and nervousness. But usually at the end, they see how wonderful it is. You know, they just want to program. They don't want to worry about what things look like or how, you know, where to split a table and all that kind of stuff. So it makes their lives a hell of a lot easier. So I've found developing web standards and interacting with other disciplines is fantastic.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay, go for it.
Used to be the day, when I started, it used to be the day that a jobbing web designer would have to have a whole bunch of different stuff. I mean, they have to know Flash, and they'd have to know Photoshop and Dreamweaver and all this kind of things. And it was very much a kind of a one-man band. And in fact, you still see it, don't you? You still see adverts for web design jobs, and it says you must have PHP, CSS, XHTML,
Flash.net.
It's like, oh my God. And actually, I think that, you know, the days of the jack-of-all-trade designer really have gone now. And what I like to think is that, you know, there are these degrees of specialization, but that people can work together and complement each other in a very good way. What I do see quite often within organizations is this split between design and code. And quite often within, I mean, for example, at some of the companies and organizations that I've been into fairly recently, they will have a design department. And these designers will be working with the client. They'll be producing Photoshop comps or mock-ups or whatever. And those things will then go off to an external department who will code it, you know, code authors who will write the HTML and perhaps add in the functionality. And not only can this create an awful lot of kind of resentment almost across the divide, because the coders are saying, well, what the bloody hell am I supposed to implement that? And also the designers are saying, well, why doesn't it not look like my Photoshop comp? And I think that there's a real problem there. And we're not really addressing it with standards as such. And I actually firmly believe that writing semantic XHTML and CSS is a designer's job. And doing what you're doing is actually the right way of doing it. But we can push it further.
We only work with designers who code. Because I think you need to understand the medium. You know, I wouldn't hire a painter that didn't understand the canvas. I wouldn't hire a print designer who didn't understand CMYK and how the print, you know, how the ink lays on the paper. So I think you have to have a designer. You know, maybe not. The designer doesn't necessarily have to actually do the coding, but they have to have a sense of what is right, what is wrong, the process, how it works.
But I always think that, you know, as a designer, what we're supposed to be doing is to we're conveying meaning is what we're doing. We're taking a brand, we're taking functionality, we're taking content, and we're presenting it in some way. We're adding meaning to it and structuring it. And that's no different to writing XHTML.
No, absolutely.
And
perhaps
actually a designer is better at understanding what markup we should be using than a code author.
So we're turning into a bit of a too runny sketch here, a bit of an informal chat. But, yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think you can't just be a visual designer. You have to understand the whole process, and you have to understand, you know, I think the problem is people mix the term design with graphic design, or, you know, purely a visual, you know, painting over. It's, you know, and most clients do that as well. When you go to a client, they expect you to be just making what they've got already pretty. And that's not what design is about at all. Design is about conveying meaning, like you say. It's about putting structure on a page. It's about highlighting the different elements that need to be highlighted. It's about allowing the user to get a sense of what's most important and what's least important. And there are a lot of designers out there that just are about prettying up a website and making, you know, making it look nice and flashy. But yeah, no, are you putting yourself in that?
No, I'm just being obsessively
compulsive. Oh, I see. So yeah, no, fair enough. So I think there's a real misunderstanding of what design is, and I think the people that think design is just prettying something up are missing the point. And I do think the job of a designer isn't only to make things pretty and make pretty Photoshop comps.
No.
It is to work on the structure, and it is to work on the information architecture and the user experience and the you know, all that kind of stuff. That's what a designer is. It's not just someone that makes pretty pictures.
Gentleman in the second row.
Don't say what you were going to say.
No, I wasn't going to say that, Andy. There are small specialist superpowers as well that I can think of, like Storm from the X-Men has power to control the weather. And I was thinking maybe that's like Molly driving the winds of change, perhaps.
Ooh. Ooh, yes. There's some deeper meaning there. Yes. Shall I repeat that? Yes, Storm from the X-Men has the ability to control the weather. Which is something in England we'd really
yes.
quite like.
That's why we're loving it out here. It's
I think they should teach that in school. Yeah. And the analogy was with Molly and pushing forward the winds of change. I'm sure she'd be very, very appreciative of that. It is interesting that we come from different backgrounds, and there are lots of different kind of specialist areas and lots of different cultures. And I think one of the things that is so pleasing when we come to events like this is that there are so many passionate people that are out there not just doing stuff to make money or to enhance their own career or their own reputation, but actually to make a better web and a better world. And certainly Molly is one of those people, I would say. And you know, we have, just on the subject of Molly and WASP and Winds of Change, we have an open WASP meeting on Monday. For the first time, we're actually holding the meeting in public. There's a task force meeting before that. So please, the more the merrier, to kind of come and see what's going on within WASP. How are we doing for time, guys?
We've got maybe 5 more minutes, so maybe a couple more questions.
Gentleman over there.
On the superhero thing, every superhero has got some sort of great story of victory, some sort of something that could be captured in like a graphic novel or in a comic book. What are some of your big victories that you've had for...
Wow, that's a heavy question.
You can do that one first.
Can I? I don't. I don't know if I have an answer to that. I think for me, it's just that people coming to me, not having to explain all the vagaries of what web standards are and what information architecture are, but just getting to a situation in my career where people come to me and respect my opinion. And that's been a really, really hard slog. I mean, you know, I've been in so many client meetings where people just don't listen to you. They want it to, you know, they want the logo to spin. They want the, you know, they want.
So it should.
Yeah, exactly. The MD doesn't like that particular shade of green, and it's kind of been a hard slog. But I'm getting to the stage where, you know, I'm dealing with clients who really appreciate the input of me and my team. So. That's I guess the victory for me is people are slowly understanding the importance of web design, seeing it not just as a prettying things up, but actually a vital part of their, you know, their brand, their public image. Now you need to have a fantastic website these days, you know, because your clients, your visitors will come along and they will associate the values that you have in your website with the values of your company. So if you've got a sloppy, difficult to use, badly organized website, people will assume you've got a sloppy, difficult to use, badly organized company. So went off on a slight tangent there, but yeah, it's just about, thank you, that person over there. Yes, do you have anything to add?
A victory. Short and sweet, really, is that I get paid and earn money and earn a living from doing something that I love to do and I love to talk about, and I'm really glad to be here doing it. On a business note, on a job-related note, we made a site for a company with big ears once, which went down quite well.
Yeah.
So that was
fantastic. Maybe one last question. Aaron?
I think the question on everyone's mind is, where do we get the action figures?
Where do you get the action figures?
The action figures of us are strictly unavailable. The action figures for this, though.
You're going backwards.
I'm going backwards. I would very much like to see action figures of these. And I don't know whether he's in the room, but it is actually Tantek Celik's birthday today.
So happy birthday, Tantek. Should we just wrap up then?
And with that, I'd like to say, on behalf of me, thank you very much indeed for coming.
Thanks everyone, guys. I hope you had a good time. The slides will be available online at both mine and Andy's websites. The URL is up there, I won't read it out.